This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates. The Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. The land of the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown.
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 I am all revved and ready to go. I didn't think we had a whole lot to talk about tonight, but somehow Wayne and I just spent a half an hour talking about everything that's going on, both from the 1984 World Series right up into Star Navigation coming up in about 5 hours. Everything covered on the news.
Yeah, as usual. Yeah. A little bit of baseball from the 80s and a little bit of Japanese pro wrestling. Yes.
Yeah. I'm not going to go on anymore. Detroit Tigers tangents. But yes, if you are a member of the Post Wrestling Cafe, you get the full XL edition of Rewind to SmackDown that comes with our news discussion, discussing the passing of Brian Macney, the age of 77. Ridge Holland has launched a YouTube channel. We dissect his first video. Dwayne Johnson reflects on the box office or lack thereof success of The Smashing Machine. What is next for his Hollywood career? Way and I just coordinated all of it. Ratings, NXT and Dynamite, and how is each show doing 6 weeks into Big Data Plus panel? We have comparisons and then a look ahead at the weekend, which, let's be honest, now that the World Series is over, the biggest thing this weekend is Yuto Ice against Hiroshi Tanahashi. I'm really looking forward to this match.
Oh, I would say so.
I'm going to do Saturday morning is watch that.
Yeah. Do you think all of Canada will be watching that match?
Easily. I think Sportsnet has got the rights.
Oh, I hope their app doesn't crash like it did for the World Series.
I think Molson is going to sponsor Yuto. Nice.
Very good. Hey, quick plug here for our latest edition of Rewind Away, which hopefully almost all of you had a chance to listen to at least a little bit of, because we did put the first 30 minutes entirely over on our free feeds. So postwrestlingcafe.com currently has Rewind Away number 193, talking about the greatest retirement matches. Really enjoyed this one, John.
I judge our shows based on what shows I go back and will listen to afterwards, and I listened to a bunch of this one afterwards. I really enjoyed this one. We had 5 matches to discuss, and we went really deep into all of them, I felt. It covered a wide range of eras, all connected by the retirement stipulation in pro wrestling, which is often maligned and with great reason in pro wrestling. But the counter to that is, when you do get the retirement right, it's probably the height of emotion that you can generate from an audience. Mm-hmm. And in particular, that Tam Nakano Sayakama Tani match was so amazing to watch and break down as well. So that bookends the show with Terry Funk saying goodbye to the wrestling world in 1983, but only Japan. He never said he was retiring everywhere.
No, but when he did say that, he came back too. So anyway, we are talking about retirement matches, meaning they are promoted as such, regardless of whether or not they actually stick. So we talk about those two matches, Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels, Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, and of course Sting and Darby Allin taking on the Bucks. All very different matches, but I think all presenting, I would say, pretty emotional, you know, conclusion in either case. So
we should have kept tabs of the tears. Like how many Terry Funk cried? Flair, both Kamatani and Nakano cried. Of course, Ric Flair cried. There were no tears in the AEW one, even Sting though Darby amazingly did not cry, despite his back being like sliced open.
His back cried blood.
Everyone cried for him.
Sean didn't really cry either.
Dude, Sean was like,
he's done.
At the office, and yeah. I'm checked out. Like, yeah. He put in a fine performance, but that was a man who, you've never seen a man more at ease that my career is done. I'm done, and I'm already at home.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no tears leaving the workplace that night. He was just off and enjoying his life.
But a great show that you can check out on this week's Rewind Away. And we did put out a free half-hour sample if you want just a taste of this week's edition of Rewind Away. And then we're going to Transformers in a couple of weeks, the 1986 animated film.
You know what that is?
No, I have no idea. Don't use any inside references for Transformers. I will not get them. I promise. And I've got I'm catching up on 90210 season 4. I realize this is coming up in a few weeks with Brandon, so I got to be ready. I've got a few more episodes I got to get through in this season.
Your big podcast debut, talking about 90210.
Do you know how long these seasons were? Do you know how many episodes they produced in season 4?
I'm guessing like a soap opera level type of like crazy amount, like, I don't know, 30 or something.
31.
31.
Wow. With a 2-hour finale. Yeah. It's a lot.
You were watching all of that?
So I was watching them casually like over the last few months. And now once I was like 2/3 of the way through the season, that's when I reached out to Brandon and was like, hey, I've watched all this. I would like to talk about this with someone. And Wade didn't seem so convinced around this idea, but I kind
of
just...
How are you fitting that, like 30 episodes of 90210 and the 1984 World Series?
Well, this is
on top of all this wrestling that you watch.
I stay up way too late. I should not be going to sleep at like 2 a.m., but that is somewhat what...
And you're reading books. Like what kind of... Like, do you live in like an alternate universe where like you have more than 24 hours in a day or something?
Well, it does even out because I have no life. So that's the deciding factor. Way that's how I operate. Tonight, SmackDown operated out of the Bon Secours Wellness Arena in Greenville, South Carolina. WrestleTick's last number 6,865. Well down from Raw back in May that drew 9,812.
Interesting.
Going out of business. But as we note, as much as like we are seeing, and this is not going to be the case, like we're going to see some enormous numbers with Boston on Monday, the Garden Show, the Washington Show with Cena's retirement. Even when we do see dips like this, and this is a more sizable drop from their last time in the market by 3,000, they are charging so much more for these 6,900 tickets that I'd be curious like what the... Granted, this was in May, so it's not like tickets were cheap back in May. But I would be curious kind of like what is the revenue they're getting off of these shows, even if there's like a small dip from their last time in a market.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. But what's this number going to be the next time they come back?
Yeah, it's a worthwhile question. Like we went through a lot of this on Wednesday with Brandon, of just kind of comparing, because every month Brandon goes through AEW and WWE and picks out shows and goes through a market to market comparison. And you can see like AEW has been down in a bunch of them, but you are starting to see like negative impressions on WWE shows when they're returning to a market. Like last weekend, they did two nights at the Delta Center in Salt Lake City. And like that SmackDown was like 4,600 people in an arena that like that's an NBA sized arena. Like there was not the appetite for two nights of WWE at the prices that they are charging. Like that was an overshoot by WWE to try though. And they did not sell out Saturday night's main event either. It's not like fans just chose one show. It was that one did better on Saturday, but Friday was a very weak number by SmackDown standards.
Yeah. And if you're WWE, are you concerned about this? What's your panic button move?
I mean, I would say like if it becomes enough of a trend that they see, and again, we're operating without the understanding of like, what are the gates here? Like if gates are healthy, like I don't think they're worried about less people as long as they're making revenue, but they will respond accordingly. Like if they are, overpricing the market, they're not going to be stubborn about that. And that's what we've always said is like, as long as these fans are meeting the demand, there's no incentive to lower prices. But once they're, is not that demand, then you do have to adjust. And I don't think they're foolish. I don't think they would. Like,
well, the concern is even if you did adjust, would people come? Is it like at what point does it reflect a softening of interest in the product itself, regardless of the pricing?
There is the larger question of like, have you created enough of an environment that, you know, a portion of your fan base are like, they've kind of been turned away by your product and it will take more for them to want to go? Or is there a built up hunger that when WWE comes and you see tickets that are not exorbitant and there's some affordable pricing, maybe you have that hunger to go? It's an unknown question. Cody starts the show and he states that Drew was the one who brought the belt into the ring at Saturday night's main event. So he proclaims, "I'm moving on," which is code in WWE for "we're continuing." And he calls this the most important belt in the business. And he's going to go out and watch this show with the fans. because there's plenty of seats for him to find unattached with tickets. But before he can get to an open seat, the snake people come out, and Alistair and Zelina are ready for something new after, quote, setting Damian Priest on fire. Zelina stands between them, slaps Cody, and Aldis is out because it is 8:10 p.m. and this two-hour show, it's got an empty 15 minutes at the end of it. So thank God for this interruption, because Cody and Alistair will renew their AEW feud and have their first singles match since 2021 tonight.
Yes, yes. That legendary program.
Yes, their three-match series.
Yeah.
Of Malakai.
Yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. Fine. I have no real kind of thoughts on any of this. He came out, got challenged, and the match is happening. About as generic of an opening segment as I think you could get.
Sounds like you were enthralled by this add-on.
It didn't do much for me, but it got us a main event.
Ilya's on his way to the ring backstage, and for the second week in a row, runs into Tama Tonga.
Mm-hmm.
What did Tama say here? I just want to hear that.
Of course, yes.
So he comes out for the open challenge, and it's answered by DIY, but you're under the impression that Chomp is the one who is going to take this and takes issue with being called a jackass. So Ilya accepts the challenge, but not from you, from him. And he points to the corner, and Corey Graves says, "Mind games from Ilya. Mind games," as he picks Johnny Gargano. They're really making us wait for this elusive Ciampa match.
Oh, man. Yeah. I wonder if we're getting it or if he's just going to, like, this is it. I tried, didn't get it.
Every week he comes out and Ilya chooses someone else. Next week's Candace is going to get the open challenge spot. Mm.
The holidays are fast approaching, but why not get your shopping done early and actually enjoy it? Uncommon Goods makes your holiday shopping easy and fun with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. I found this super cool Starry Night Air Fort. It's basically a blow-up fort covered in glow-in-the-dark stars. You just hook it up to a box fan, and in less than a minute, you have this awesome little space for the kids to play, or even for grown-ups to sneak in and have fun. It's lightweight, easy to pack away, and really great for relaxing or imaginative play at home. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting small businesses and artists, and with every purchase, they even give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. So shop early, have fun, and cross those names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
November on the Post Wrestling Cafe will include Rewind Away, looking at some of the biggest retirement matches in pro wrestling history, with selections from All Japan Pro Wrestling, WWE, and Stardom, among others. Plus, we'll have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322 from Madison Square Garden, and the Tanahashi Final Homecoming. John and Way will be taking all of your questions on this month's installment of Ask Away, and John gets together with Brandon from New Jersey for a Season 4 retrospective of 90210. All that and so much more. Join now at postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door. So Ilya Dragunov and Johnny Gargano, our first of two U.S. championship matches on this show. So Ciampa distracts, giving Gargano the early advantage. Gargano hits his slingshot spear, and this crowd, so excited by this contest, began a light Michael Cole chant. They get into striking on the feet. Constantine Special is hit by Dragunov, and then a bombs away knee drop, which even elicited a Ray Stevens mention by Corey Graves. And then it's Gargano fighting back. This vicious super kick hits, and a poison rana follows. Ilya knocks him off the buckle, hits the senton, and goes for the H-bomb, but is booted in the face. And as he goes for another Constantine Special, Candice LeRae prevents the move from the floor as Gargano hits a leaping tornado DDT to the floor, and one final beat, Ilya kicks out. He goes for another one final beat, and Ilya stops him, deadlift superplex, and then boom with the H-bomb in 10 minutes and 55 seconds. Ilya retains.
Very enjoyable match, as is the standard of a Ilya Dragunov match, as is the standard lately of these U.S. title open challenges. I mean, Dragunov is somebody whose intensity is so great that even a match with no build like this is just fun to watch and is a highlight almost automatically.
No. You missed Paul Levesque's line. They don't do matches without, they don't book for great matches. It's the best story.
Okay. Well, this match was awful then. Maybe that'll make them happy if I said that. But, you know, like you need a talent as strong as he is to just be able to get by on wrestling alone. And he certainly fulfills that. Sami Zayn did. I would suggest Dragunov fulfills that even to a greater extent. I'm glad at least that this U.S. title is being used to showcase pure wrestling.
Just, great wrestler who comes out to have great matches. What a concept. And people look forward to it every week.
I'm curious, whenever the show goes back to 3 hours, get both this U.S. title open challenge and the tag team matches?
Chelsea will start her open challenge.
Okay. I think I would be into that, actually.
Yeah. That'd actually be funny. We do like just Chelsea's open challenges, and she just like,
and she loses the first one.
She does like House of Torture style booked matches.
El Gargano's role is as a tag team wrestler right now, which I'm not even that upset about. Like, it's this many years in, I feel like we kind of know his ceiling, you know.
Aldis meets with Sami Zayn, who is still not cleared, but he wants to be in Phoenix's corner tonight to stop the MFTs. This is literally was his argument last week and got turned down by Aldis. But Aldis explains, no, you're not cleared. You're a liability to be out there. Focus on getting healthy. And Zayn warns him, I'm not going to just stand by and watch for much longer. And really begs the question why they're flying this guy in every week.
Maybe he drove himself.
From Florida, sure. South Carolina. I mean, you can do it.
Yeah.
R-Truth is in next. He's in his Cena gear. He has two balls that he hands over and says his balls are in Nick's hands. Nick explains, your name's already in the tumbler. And we got more jokes about balls. This was so funny. So funny.
Yeah.
I'm glad they brought him back.
I'm glad he's found the joy in his life again.
This has been the return everyone wanted back in May.
Realistically, let's say he didn't come back. What would he be doing right now? He'd be doing the same shit, but in TNA. Okay? Because I don't know if I saw him in AEW.
If this were pre-pandemic, I think this guy would be murdering it on the indies. Doing little wrestling,
what
but would be so over.
When
there was an actual like stronger independent scene that I don't feel he would.
This guy's working GCW.
I think he could do whatever he wants. Just like this guy could go and he'd make a killing off, pardon the pun, off like meet and greets, merchandise. Imagine this guy doing his podcast. This guy doing a YouTube channel.
I could see a podcast. Yeah,
this guy could do anything he wants, but. You know, it's as though like his release never happened. He's like right back to the exact same spot. But hey, if he got a nice deal out of it, then more power to him.
Sure.
Yeah. But he's in the exact same spot. Gargano apologizes to Ciampa, and Axiom and Fraser laugh and call them jackasses. They just stood there. And they agreed. Jade Cargill walks out as the new women's champion. She is putting the women's locker room on notice because I'm that bitch. And leaves. Sure. Best promo she's cut.
Short and sweet, yeah. I don't know if she said that line since coming to the WWE.
I don't think she said it in WWE.
Yeah. Brought it back. Lovely.
Is this IP that is being taken?
I don't know. I don't know if that's been copyrighted or not. I'm that bitch. Yeah. But I love this. Like, it was, she came out like you're thinking she's going to talk a whole lot. She came out and just said, I'm that bitch, drops the mic, leaves. That's great. Like, her strength is like 75% aura. And there's nothing wrong with that. Some of the greatest wrestlers of all time are 75% aura. Why not just emphasize it and just, you know, by having her not speak as much, I think it only preserves that. It doesn't just preserve it. I think it emphasizes it, you know, creates a little bit of mystique and a bit of more of a cool factor that was not as strong when she was a babyface. So I really liked it.
How much time did Goldberg really need for a retirement speech? That was the underlying theme of this promo.
Who's next? Nobody. Bye. That's it. That's all you need to say.
My bed. So she walks out And then Charlotte makes her entrance with Alexa Bliss, and we have the stare down between Jade and Charlotte, which was kind of like Jade's like first interaction when she came to WWE, and they teased this backstage.
Right.
So this was teased a long, long time ago, and all these years later, maybe they'll get around to it. And Flair tries to go after Jade as they're trading words, and Alexa pulls Charlotte away because she has a match to focus on.
So really, that I mean, that feels like a first challenger. That's like a pretty imminent thing, right? Unless this was meant to be a longer term tease, like for, you know, either a Rumble or even a WrestleMania.
Feels like something bigger you could get towards rather than Survivor Series. But you also could do it you could do it sooner. Yeah.
It of course lends also a bit more expectation to the idea that she's moving on. Charlotte is moving on from the tag division.
Chelsea and Elba Fire are in the back speaking Spanish when Meechan and B-Fab enter to remind her that Julia has surpassed your reign as U.S. champion. More to come on that. And then Chelsea goes off on she's going to win back the U.S. title. She'll be the first and fourth women's United States champion. Then she'll become the greatest women's champion as Jade is overhearing this. Chelsea cowers to Jade, and then Jade has some words for B-Fab, and those two start arguing, setting up Jade against B-Fab next week.
Yeah, which
I think that match may be as long as Jade's promo tonight.
I mean, I think that's certainly the way to book her. You know, you have a new chance with Jade Cargill here, and I don't think they should really mess it up. I mean, look how relatively quickly, that match with Tiffany Stratton was. She took the entire match and gave Stratton very little offense, and I don't think this should be any different against B-Fab.
You're going to have short matches, and you're going to talk in sentences, and that will be the extent.
This is their chance to make her a Goldberg, like a second chance, you know?
So Charlotte and Nia Jax, they did not generate a whole lot of heat in this match, but it was, Jax getting sent to the floor. Flair fought back with a pescado, rammed Jax into the post, and then it's big chops, moonsault off the top by Charlotte for a two count, and Jax catches her with a sit-out powerbomb, misses the Annihilator, and Jax gets to her feet, lifts her on the shoulders to place on the apron, and is sent into a tree of woe. Flair leaps over with a knee drop, and then the tornado DDT by Charlotte, when all of a sudden Lash Legend appears. And we got Marina Shafir and Timeless Toni Storm, pretty much the same thing, where Lash chokes out Alexa Bliss on the floor. This distracts Charlotte, leading to the Annihilator, and Nia pinning Charlotte in 10 minutes and 24 seconds and making it very clear that Lash and Nia Jax have formed an alliance. And this looks to be the official call-up for Lash Legend.
Mm-hmm. Good for her. You know, finally getting called up. I mean, I think she's shown her talent and abilities. Wasn't doing a whole lot in NXT at this point. So, good for her.
And was part of that listing for the women's War Games. So,
she was.
The Observer had listed Nia, Lash, Becky, Asuka, and Kairi against AJ Lee, Rhea Ripley. Which I guess it will depend on Rhea's like broken nose, but. Mm-hmm. You know, we're still weeks away from this show. Io, Charlotte, and Alexa. So this would feel like they're starting to build towards that and continuing Monday when Flair and Bliss take on the Kabuki Warriors.
Okay. I think this is a good way to promote Lash Legend. You know, it promises like a very dominant tag team for the division. And I think it's a pretty... I'm curious to see personality-wise, like what she's able to do with Nia, because... I'm sure there's some chemistry there, but I don't. It's not as apparent to me, you know, with the two of them as personalities.
They were basically feuding in NXT, but they did address that in the promo because Kathy Kelly interviews them and Jax explains she had to go find a friend and Lash was a formidable adversary when I faced her in NXT. And Lash says, I'm everything I say I am. The two of us are going straight to the top. So it's not just an alliance here. It looks like, you know, it does feel like they are trying to give some bolstering to this women's tag division and these two being added to it. So, you know, a fine call up and we will see how like Lash has, like there was a time when she was on NXT television and she was so not ready and she did make a lot of strides in NXT. I like the idea of her being paired with somebody for this call up rather than just being on her own at the moment.
Agreed. I mean, I think she had something with Jakara Jackson, but I mean, maybe rightfully so, didn't see enough in Jakara Jackson. We'll see if she's able to build a similar chemistry with Nia Jax here. I mean, it's since, you know, through this finish, of course, that they're probably going to face Charlotte and Alexa. But I also...
I think everyone's going to face Charlotte and Alexa by the end of this show.
But I also feel Charlotte and Alexa are likely to lose the championships on Monday. So is this just going to be a titleless feud, or could Charlotte and Alexa actually retain against the Kabuki Warriors?
Well, I could see Nia and Lash being involved on Monday, especially if all these heels are getting together for War Games. Like that would make sense to lead to all of this.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show, plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
All this announces for the John Cena tournament starting next week, The Miz will face Jey Uso. And LA Knight will face, I'm going to keep this one a surprise. I think he drew
R-Truth.
R-Truth. No.
Who could it be?
It's Matthew Justice. I don't know. Tune in next week, folks. I think it is smart to keep some of these surprises.
Who's the type of name that would make all this react that way? Okay. Let's assume this is a surprise from NXT.
Scott Steiner.
Yeah, he should keep
anyone in NXT. Where are they next week? I think they're in a,
not anyone in NXT. Like if the name was, Saquon Sugars, like you think Aldis would react that way?
you know what? That would mean, though, we'd get Shug Knight.
Very good. I almost want to see it because of that.
I'm reading my latest reading way. I'm reading the new Tupac book.
I don't know how you find the time. You are just as interesting as Brandon from New Jersey. Wow.
Fascinating childhood for Tupac.
Yeah.
We move on. Julia and Chelsea Green for the United States Championship. Chelsea was in the Mexican colors after winning the mixed tag titles with Ethan Page. Arrivederci was hit by Julia within seconds. No one reacted. Chelsea kicked out. It's like nothing. It was just like nothing. This move was like,
how many people can name her finishers? Like, well, I don't know how long she's had this championship, but it's been such a nothing run.
I have so much to say here for such a little match here. Green is tossed towards the corner with a Beal, and then Kiana James gets involved, nailing Green with a forearm. So Alba Fyre takes out Kiana, and Julia tries to go through the ropes to attack Alba, allowing Chelsea to roll up Julia with a roll up using the rope and pins her in 1 minute, 37 seconds. So Chelsea wins back the title. She is a double champion with Ethan Page, who she celebrates with in the crowd. And this ends what I have to call like the most disappointing title run in all of WWE this year.
Mm-hmm.
And what a nothing match to end this with. And one where I don't care what you do. Like, there was nothing about this that told me there is something for Julia after this. It just felt like this title run didn't work. Let's go back to the person it did work with, and we'll give her the double title gimmick with her partner. They have just... Julia has been a remarkably miscast, misused character in WWE this year. And this whole handling of this title run and ending it in 90 seconds like this was just the cherry on top to that argument.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm not really upset, man, because this run was not good whatsoever. I mean, the reason why you would hire Julia for this, for any company in the first place, is because she's a very good wrestler, and she had very little time to showcase that. That's the thing that would get her over. That's the thing that's getting, like, you know, Asuka, Io, at least over to a certain level, to the point now where the audience is invested enough in them as characters. they didn't let her wrestle, and they certainly didn't give her any sort of character. They gave her like a manager that feels incredibly, that I don't think she has any chemistry with.
There's no chemistry between these two. Nothing.
None. And they didn't even let her wrestle, you know, her greatest attribute. So I don't understand the decision behind it. Clearly a lot of a lack of foresight in the plan for how this run was going to go. And it's at the point now where I'm not really upset that we're going back to Chelsea. So it's almost just laughable. Like, we're at this point now where, so I kind of understand the gimmick here. They've got a Mexican championship, what Ethan Page is now kind of calling like a Canadian championship. And now they have the American championship. So they truly own all of North America. But it's just laughable that
this concept was too clever for them to not execute.
They ended this Julia run for a punchline, essentially. And it's hilarious, right? It's just been a terrible run for Julia. And I'm not upset that we're going back to comedy here, because maybe it's the way to go, because this writing staff, certainly on SmackDown, and maybe this division, just isn't so suited for, like, clearly just a wrestling-based championship.
It's just been such a rough fit for Julia in this, kind of just cemented all of that.
I really hope that this is a path for Ethan Page to actually get onto the main roster as well.
Listen, I think Ethan Page has been, like, what a value pickup for WWE of someone that, like, I didn't know how things would go for him when he joined NXT, and he has turned out to be, you can see, just he is someone that they have total trust in, like, when they send him to AAA, or they put him in these roles. Like, I would not have guaranteed that this guy would have made the main roster. And now I'm just expecting, like, him, like, here we got him on SmackDown. And if they're going to utilize, like, these two are a great act together, yes, that they kind of just threw together in NXT, and it's worked really well. And I think it could easily transfer to the main roster.
And it's a great path for somebody like an Ethan Page onto the main roster, because they could debut him as a single star. They could have him do an open challenge for, like, Ilya Dragunov. And I think he'd be fine. But then the next week, he'd just be in the back with Kit Wilson doing nothing. Doing this with Chelsea Green being, like, maybe the lone male presence in her female feuds, I actually think that's a way more interesting way for him to, like, get heat. Chelsea gets a lot of airtime, and I think rightfully so, because she stands out. She's very entertaining, and Ethan being able to piggyback off of that would be a great way for Ethan Page to, you know, like, be introduced to a main roster audience.
Solo is with the MFTs, said they did a good job last week, but not good enough because Zayn is still walking. The Wyatt Six have something that belongs to them. So does Ilya. He has tasked Tama Tonga with going for that, while Tala needs to make a statement tonight. So Tala literally roars into the air in agreement to this, as the Wyatts then crawl from the darkness in the shadows behind them.
I think each member of MFTs needs, like, an animal sound that they can replicate.
We don't need words beyond Solo, okay? Yeah. He is the Solo speaker. Yeah, we got Tama. Now Tala just roars like a lion.
Like a lion, sure.
Tonga is maybe still to be determined. And then we've got
maybe a hummingbird. No?
Yeah.
Jeff.
For a cop?
What could JC be? What animal? What spirit animal do you see?
He's still working on one. I don't know. What is native to, like, Guam?
Maybe Guam. Let me look this up. Guam. Let's see what Guam's national animal is.
Okay.
The carabao.
That was going to be my next guess.
The water buffalo.
Do you mean caribou?
No, carabao. C-A-R-A-B-A-O.
B-A-O. Okay.
Wait a second. Let me just look this up. Carabao are the it looks like just a big cow.
All right. It looks like a bull.
Yeah, sure. Bull, yeah.
You mess with the bull, you get the cob. Okay. Bliss is in the trainer's room with Charlotte, and Charlotte apologizes for losing. Bliss is like, no, I'm sorry. That happened out there. And the trainer's like, I'm going to go get you ice. So he leaves and came back, and I thought Yuto was here. But no, in fact, it's a trainer in disguise, and it is Asuka who pulls down the doctor's outfit, spits mist at them, as Cole remarks, the Kabuki Doctors. This really got me. I thought this was actually out of nowhere, completely preposterous, but enjoyable nonetheless.
You know, you put a face mask on somebody, suddenly you don't see that half their face is painted. And
she needs to be in like a horror movie of some sort. I think she would be fantastic.
Oh, I'd watch that. Yeah.
Yeah. This was a what a trainer's room. Awesome. So yeah, that sets the table for Monday. You think we're getting the title change Monday? I think it's likely.
I feel all signs point to it. I mean, it just really freshens things up, and Asuka and Kairi are so hot right now.
Rey Fénix and Tala Tonga, Nakamura and the Motor City Machine Guns all attack the MFTs beforehand, before the bell. So Fénix dives onto Tala, then goes for again, and rams Tala into the post. And they had to do pretty much like Rey Fénix. They instructed him, you are now Rey Mysterio. Okay, that's how you work your matches. You fight from behind and as the underdog.
Fénix. Maybe people just mistook him. Like the board says Rey, and they're like, hey, Rey, what are you doing here?
Michael Cole will absolutely start calling this guy Rey at some point. Fénix hits his leaping spin kick in the corner. Sunset gets stopped. And then the goodbye amigo and a high cross gets Tala off his feet. And Fénix comes off the top. Tala goes for a choke slam, and it's turned into a Rana, which Tala blocks, power bombs him, and finishes him with the choke slam in 9 minutes and 13 seconds. And then, as if the loss wasn't enough, Michael Cole reminds us, remember, Rey had the advantage because of Nakamura and the machine guns at the beginning, too. It's like, yeah, the numbers game was not in their favor, I guess. So Sammy runs down with a chair to chase off the MFTs, and does not get suspended as another member of the locker room.
He didn't attack a referee.
Okay. Well, he still defied orders. He's a liability. He could cause a lawsuit here.
I guess they're used to that.
Yeah.
They're very sure that people aren't willing to pay the money to sue them, I guess. I mean, this match was a pretty expected outcome here. You know, Tala Tonga is by far the most credible threat behind the MFTs right now, but that's not honestly saying much because I don't think they're a very... they're not a very scary group. It kind of sucks to see Rey Fénix, you know, be put into this role, but at this point it feels like it's a natural progression. I wasn't that impressed with Tala Tonga here. You know, like he came across to me just like very generic big man, you know, complete with the most generic finisher a big man could have, which is a power bomb and a choke slam. So maybe he's been taking notes from Kevin Nash as well, because yes, he definitely looked big, he definitely looked tall, but his wrestling style also felt like it was out of 1995. So yeah, I felt really nothing there.
Great year for Tala to lean on. Mm-hmm. He needs to check out 1984, very underrated year.
Oh. But then, like honestly, like he is a guy where I wonder if like actually spending a year in NXT on NXT television would have actually benefited him, because you look at somebody like an Obafemi right now, who I think is already way more charismatic than Tala Tonga.
No, I think sitting on the sidelines for a year after New Japan was the better play. Yeah. I think that got him better. To be quite honest, like you bring up like an Obafemi, it's like I would love to see those two like next to each other. Like Tala Tonga is like a lot going for him is his size, and his size would stand out a whole lot more in NXT than it will here on SmackDown. Like imagine this guy standing next to Drew McIntyre. You know what I mean? Like the size is not going to be so. There's only so many Rey Fénixes you can put next to this guy, and. Mm-hmm. Like he's kind of like an average size. He is tall. I'll give him that, but it's not like this guy's hulking over everybody.
And when you're tall in a land of tall people, like you kind of have to stand out in other ways. That's either through charisma, through a gimmick, or through your promo. And I guess we just haven't really had a chance to see that from him yet.
But lots of opportunities for puns with the name. So there's the positives.
We've heard him roar.
I love that roar. I think that should be his catchphrase. November on the Post Wrestling Cafe will include Rewind Away, looking at some of the biggest retirement matches in pro wrestling history, with selections from All Japan Pro Wrestling, WWE, and Stardom, among others. Plus, we'll have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322 from Madison Square Garden, and the Tanahashi Final Homecoming. John and Wei will be taking all of your questions on this month's installment of Ask Away, and John gets together with Brandon from New Jersey for a Season 4 retrospective of 90210. All that and so much more. Join now at postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door. Next week on SmackDown, Jade Cargill against B-Fab, Jey Uso against The Miz in the tournament, and LA Knight against Jun Kasai.
Can't wait. That would make Nick Aldis react that way for sure. Yeah.
Kathy Kelly catches up with The Miz. He is asked about the payback he got on Carmelo Hayes, who has just disappeared this week. Everything The Miz touches turns to gold. He made Hayes relevant. I beat John Cena in the main event of WrestleMania. There shouldn't even be a tournament. I am the obvious choice. Jey Uso is just a highlight. Highlights fade. I will beat him. Then I will end the career of John Cena. I think everything he promised here will not happen.
Unlikely, but he sounded very passionate about it.
Well, that's The Miz. Monday's Raw, Cena's on the show in Boston. The tournament matches are Nakamura against Sheamus and Rusev against Damian Priest. Bliss and Charlotte defending the tag titles against the Kabuki Warriors and Stephanie Vaquet versus Raquel Rodriguez for the women's title.
All right.
And then we go to Cody Rhodes and Aleister Black. First matchup together in over 4 years. Black has some counters early on for Cody's offense, and Zelina starts choking Cody from the floor. Cody comes back, disaster kick, calls for the crossroads early, not realizing it was only 9:52, so it stopped with a knee, and Black hits a PK. Cody hits the Cody cutter, only gets a two, and then he's wasting time with the bionic elbow, allowing for Black to hit a head kick. And as the Black Mass is attempted, it gets stopped, the crossroads is stopped, and they trade kicks, both men go down. And with that, Dan Engler, surveying the two men, doesn't see his blind spot, because in runs Drew McIntyre, who claymores Engler, screaming at Dan that he too is against him. I left this assuming this was the referee from Saturday. I was not going to go back to double check this, but Cody attacks Drew. Black gets involved. Damian Priest runs down. His eye looks like it is back to 100% after the burning, so that's good. Zelina tries to leap on Priest, but Priest just doesn't want anything to do with Zelina. But because of the distraction, Aleister Black goes for the eye of Damian Priest. Uh-oh. Cody Cutter is hit to Drew, and then Aldis has had enough. He comes out, and he tells Drew, "You are suspended." And Drew yells that, "Everyone is against me!" And that's how the show ends, and presumably gets this guy out of the John Cena tournament and, I don't know, disappears for a pay-per-view cycle, if that.
Yeah, I'm assuming he's just going back home for whatever reason. These sort of like suspensions just they really mean nothing anymore, right? Like, it just, these days I think we can all read that it's just a guy taking a break. Just fine, but like I'm at the point now where you don't even have to justify it. Like, just go away. Like, it's, you know, we're not gonna ask any questions. Show up 2 months later, whatever. Like, okay, you're gone. He's back. Yeah,
it is funny though that they, so WrestlePalooza, they do the clean finish with Cody and Drew. That's like the blow off, and then the second match is the match that they book with like the out for Drew, where he gets crossroads onto the belt, which they are playing that up for the Drew character to complain about. And I assume we will eventually go to another Cody Drew match, but I don't sense there's a lot of demand for Cody Drew 3 at the moment.
No, I certainly didn't feel that way coming off the match. The only interesting part of the match is like maybe a continued heel turn tease of Cody Rhodes. And tonight, at least, you got none of that whatsoever. So I don't know if they're even headed towards that direction, or if it's just something that they'll bring up occasionally. The match itself, I thought it was like very average, you know, like good, but I thought it was pretty
Cody and Black.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty lacking in heat, man.
I agree,
and that's kind of concerning for Cody, but maybe it's more reflective of Aleister Black, who, I mean, Zelina, I think looks great with him, but it hasn't necessarily refreshed Black in a way that I was hoping. He again looks really cool, but just not that interesting this time around.
It felt like a much slowed down match too. It did not have the pop and the crispness. Like they had some really like great matches a couple years back. I didn't sense it. Like at the end of this, was I dying to see a rematch between these two? I really was not. But that looks to be Cody's direction for obviously like doing the non-finish in this match.
Black versus Cody. And with the
they've got to do another match, but it does not feel like a big match to me.
Yeah, I guess I'm just not so sure, because like maybe they really don't want to pin Aleister Black, and therefore this was their out, and they're going to move on after this.
Well, there's no one else for Cody at the moment.
Okay.
For your whole purpose about like people just that disappear for no reason, like Randy Orton has just disappeared without any reason.
Maybe he'll come back. Yeah. But like Drew, sorry.
Priest maybe still, he'll come back. Maybe he won't. Maybe that's the last we've ever seen of Randy Orton.
Priest is still very attached to Aleister Black.
Yes. I did like the fact that you had, you also had the history of Damian Priest with Drew McIntyre. So like the run-in was not just, well, this is my opponent and Cody's dealing with Aleister. It's like, there is actually a history that Damian has with both these guys that there's at least a logical reason here to do this. I thought at least you would get like a tag match coming out of this, but they did the suspension deal.
Any indication of whether Cody might be part of War Games or not? Do you not expect Cody?
I guess it depends if they want a title match at Survivor Series, because I don't think you're going to, like, I think Punk for sure is in War Games. So that mm-hmm. eliminates that title match. And then do you want both your world champions in there? Like, I could see them doing Cody and Aleister Black on that show. Because they have no other challenger ready with Drew gone. Yeah, they will need to do something with that. Hmm. I wasn't as enthralled with the match either. And yeah, the angle with Drew at the end. High points of the show, the U.S. title challenge continues to be, I think, a great aspect to these SmackDown shows. I think mm-hmm. it really helps. The end of this with that soundbite in my head, I couldn't imagine this being a 3-hour show.
Oh, yeah. We'll get ready. It's just to me, it just feels very much like a B show with like an overall feeling that is not as strong. That said, I'm very high on Jade's new heel presentation. I'm looking forward to, you know, like her just being pushed as a pure dominant Goldberg style of heel. So we'll see what that BFAT match will be like next week. Chelsea winning the U.S. championship. We've expressed our disappointment about this Julia run. I am curious to see like what she does with Ethan Page as a U.S. Mexican Canadian group of champions. I think that that's going to be very entertaining. So beyond that, man, I have very little interest in like what the men are doing right now between the MFTs. Cody and Drew is turned to me pretty lacking. Priest and Black is just, yeah, you know.
And we didn't even get a follow-up with Kit Wilson and Carmelo this week.
Mm. Oh, shame.
Damn it. Well, there you go, everybody. That was SmackDown. Any final thoughts?
No, it's not. It wasn't that strong of a show tonight, I feel.
Well, we are going to say goodbye on the YouTube feed because we are going to be heading on over to the forum. But again, this coming weekend, if you want to check out Collision Course, Wei Ting will be joining Kate from Montreal right after Collision on Saturday evening. On Sunday, we've got the NWA podcast going live.
Are you sure?
No, I'm wrong. I was doing the schedule for next week. That's next Sunday. Next Sunday, they'll be here. So look out for that. But you got Collision Course this weekend. And do, if you have time, go back and check out the greatest retirement matches on Rewind Away. A fun show.
And our Double Double and Espresso Tier patrons have access to daily news updates, courtesy of John Pollock, Jack Wannin, doing today's as well. Get all caught up on the week's news if you've kind of been left behind with these short little podcasts, just simply recapping a lot of what is on postwrestling.com right now.
All right. We'll say goodbye to you on the YouTube channel. We're back Monday night after Raw.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.